What's up, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Citywide Blackout, the podcast that brings you the best artists from around the world. I'm your host, Max Bowen. I'm chatting with writer Erica Schultz for her new fantasy comic series, Forgotten Home, available through Comixology Originals. This is a really cool series, which focuses on Sheriff's Deputy Lorraine Adelaide when a number of children go missing. She's one called to investigate, and she finds some unusual traces. Traces of magic, that is. This all brings her back to her home world of Janata, a place she lived many years ago, and Schultz dives into the whole story behind this, what went on in this mystical world, and what exactly she's heading back into. Back on this topic that I love so very dearly, that is comics. We are talking to Erica Schultz. She is the writer, creator of the brand new Forgotten Home series, which you can get exclusively on Comixology.com. If you don't know, now you know. Comixology is a monthly subscription service, which you can get comics from DC, Marvel, all kinds of indie presses. It's a great service, $5.99 a month. Go there, check it out. And Erica, welcome to the show. It's awesome to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to get into the world building of this series. This is kind of like a fantasy meets the real world kind of series. We have Sheriff's Deputy Lorraine Adelaide, who is not from around here, you might say. She is from a magical world where she basically escaped from, but now recent events are sort of drawing her back into that world, very much against her will. So, Erica, the question I have for you is, what went into building the world of this series?
Well, I mean, I wanted something that felt real, even though we're in a new place. And you're right, Lorraine does not come from here. She comes from this sort of magical world that's just to the right of ours. One of the things that the story deals with is, you know, people give off energy, they give off frequency, and her world just exists on a different frequency than ours. It's kind of like, I want to say Jonathan Hickman multiple years ago had done an Avengers arc called Rogue World, where it was basically every Earth, like the multiverse of every Earth on top of each other. And Tony Stark had done something that messed with the frequency of the 616, which then sort of opened things up to another world. And it was almost a prequel to, it was almost kind of a prequel to Secret Wars 2, because, you know, with the convergence of all the different worlds and everything, but I'm sort of getting off topic. Anyway, basically, I just sort of came up with this kind of cool idea about, you know, bringing magic into setting it against this sort of urban, you know, normal life, and sort of that playing with that dichotomy. One of the things that came out of this when I was originally developing this was at the time, the first Frozen movie was like super popular. Mm-hmm. And I kind of thought, like, I want to do the anti-Frozen.
So fire?
So I had, no, not fire. but what I had done was I was sort of working on a story about, you know, like two magical sisters that hated each other. Another story actually came out of that, but some of the world of Forgotten Home was developed initially with that, you know, because we have in the first issue, we talk about how there's this sort of evil queen that Lorraine escaped when she first left. And now she's unfortunately been found by her.
And is it me, or is Tony Stark responsible for the majority of calamities in the Marvel Universe? Seems like he definitely caused a lot of shit to go down.
Between Tony Stark and, well, I would say the whole Illuminati.
Yes. You know, Oh my God.
The Tony Stark, it was Tony Stark, Mr. Fantastic, Black Bolt, Black Panther, Doctor Strange, and Professor X. And at one point there was that they were the ones that decided to send Hulk off world.
And that worked
and
out
at
so
one
well.
Point, exactly. And at one point a while ago, this is way before the Infinity War movie, but obviously way after the original Infinity Gauntlet, they all had one Infinity Stone each. And it was like something that they thought was a smart idea. Which obviously was not, but you know.
And yet Stark's whole like shtick is that he's just like so damn smart, and yet he's not smart enough to see, hey, wait a minute, I'm more or less the like the first domino that, you know, causes all this stuff to go down.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It, you know, but that's sort of the, isn't that sort of the scourge of the super smart people? I mean, like, look at Elon Musk and all these other like super geniuses. Isn't that sort of their curse, is that they don't have the pre-nascent, is that the correct word? They don't have the premonitions and such. Who was it Oppenheimer, after the atomic bomb went off, made this whole comment about, like, you know, now I am the bringer of death, because he finally realized, like, wow, this thing was way bigger than I thought it would be, or I had no idea it would actually cause this much destruction.
Mm-hmm. I think the whole quote is, now I'm become death, destroyer of worlds, because yeah, you're right. He realizes just what he's done and what it means. And here we are today, and we're all going to die in nuclear fire in all likelihood.
Well, you know, we all got to die somehow.
Exactly. But let's get back on the topic of this new series. So this is an 8-issue urban fantasy series. This series, you're not working alone in this. You have a pretty big team as a part of this. And I'm curious as to how you all met.
Marika Cresta actually was on my radar for this series because of her work on Power Pack and X-Men. I think she's a phenomenal artist. She really is. She has such a great vision. And because she has a degree in architecture, when we go to this, you know, alternate world, Janata, you're going to see her really shine. I'd sort of done the deep dive on Pinterest and put together a couple of boards with, you know, like old Ralph McQuarrie stuff and, you know, sort of Blade Runner, Sid Mead, but like not as dirty concept art. And I sent that to her and I said, you know, this is, you know, kind of the feel, you know. And she just, I wish I could, you know, post spoilers. I can't, but
just, no spoilers.
Just know that the second issue is even more beautiful than the first.
Oh, I cannot wait, because I love comics that give you this like wide, expansive world. I think some of the better ones I can think of off the top of my head would be actually another series I'm also reading on Comixology, which is called Starstone. It's kind of a newish series, and the world design, that one is so detailed and in depth. I totally love it. What would you say is probably one of your favorite comics with regards to the world building?
Indie comic wise, I would say By the Last Man or Saga.
Oh yeah, Saga, definitely.
I've been an X-Men fan for a million years, so I'll always say X-Men. But that's, you know, they've been around since, you know, what, 63. So it's tough. The world building was kind of already there by the time I showed up to it.
Yeah.
but I really love Brian K. Vaughan's work. I think there's some really cool stuff with some of the other Comixology originals. I would say The Field Tripping, which is James Asmus's book. Mm-hmm. It's got like a really cool vibe to it. It's kind of like Magic School Bus on acid.
That is the most honest review I have ever heard for a comic.
And James is terrific. And you know, we hung out at Baltimore last weekend at Baltimore Comic Con. So I think he knows that when I say that, I mean that with all reverence and sincerity. but yeah, I mean, it's Magic School Bus on acid in a good way. And so I like the idea of world building. I used to say that I kind of hated it when I, you know, would do M3 and 12 Devils Dancing, which are some of the other creator-owned work that I've done. And they're set in the real world. There's no magic. There's none of that stuff. But I do, now that I'm sort of doing the deep dive for Forgotten Home, I do kind of like it. And I had a great time, you know, when I was writing Xena and Charmed for Dynamite. I had a great time, you know, playing in that world. And that was something that was obviously established. The world was established in TV. But I had a lot of fun working in that, too.
Now, you've worked in a ton of different titles. I think you just like threw out like five or six that you've worked in. Was working on Forgotten Home, did that offer anything new for you in terms of either the genre or the story?
Definitely. You know, I'm really excited about this book. I'm also terrified about this book because it is somewhat out of my wheelhouse. I mean, everybody sort of knows me as trying to be Ed Brubaker, you know, writing all the crime fiction. But I really do love this book, and I'm really excited about how different it is from the other work that I've done. And I'm hoping that people sort of see that and see that I can do more than just write crime fiction.
Do you see any correlation between doing the crime fiction and this? Does that kind of come in handy with any aspects of the story?
Yeah, I mean there is some there's some, you know, mystery to it, and there's some there's a couple of things you got to kind of work out. The audience has to work out for themselves, so that definitely. That definitely helps. but it is different in the sense that when you read, you know, M3, 12 Devils, these are crime fiction that is very grounded in reality. You know, there's no magic. There's no, you know, Book of Vashanti. You know, there's no Crimson Bands of Sidorak, you know, coming to help anybody out.
Oh, darn.
It's all just, you know, straight up. Real life fiction, but at the same time, I'm hoping that people, I mean, I kind of hoped that people really liked the work that I did on Charmed and Xena, because that did play with the fantasy, it played with the magic and stuff like that, and I'm hoping to sort of bring fans of that to this.
One of the things that I really dug about the first issue is that even though magic is obviously a very strong part of the story, it's not the story itself. You know, like it's not like, okay, this is a story with magic. It's like this is a story with magic, but it's also got this and this and this other thing too. My question to you is, how do you achieve a balance so that the like really one of the stronger elements doesn't become the only element?
Lorraine and her abilities become a larger story point. Mm-hmm. Later, but I wanted the audience to understand that for Lorraine, magic is old hat. You know, magic is just how she lives. She's had these abilities since she was a child, and it's something that she's always had. And for her, it's normal. We play back and forth in that first issue about how, you know, she investigates things her own way. By using magic, something that her colleague Martin just wouldn't understand, because, you know, obviously she's doing things that he doesn't have a hand in. But I wanted the audience to sort of, I felt that if I treated magic as normal and didn't make that big of a deal of it, then they would just sort of accept, oh, yeah, so she's got magic. I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really liked how she kind of used it to not like solve the crimes with magic, but to kind of like enhance what she already does. Like she was not just saying, okay, magic, do this thing for me. It was, okay, let's see how far I can get on my own, and then we'll take the magic away. Like there's one scene that I really dug where she was investigating one of the other kids who had disappeared. And the dad is like right behind her with like a shotgun to her head. But she takes like the diplomatic approach and trying to like talk him down. I think it definitely shows her to be a character that is more than just someone who can do magic. She's a lot more.
Exactly. She is, what's the phrase? She's greater than the sum of her parts kind
mm-hmm.
of thing.
Yep.
And I think that, well, one thing that we will learn is that her having these abilities on Earth is, you know, amazing. But when we get to her home world, it's kind of like Superman on Krypton, you know?
Yeah.
It's you know, Superman on Earth. Wow, he's Superman. Superman on Krypton, he's nobody special.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah, she's like one more person on a whole planet of people who can all do magic.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, and that sort of comes into play because she has a semblance of arrogance. And, you know, a good story is always sort of knocking people down a peg. I mean, well, that's sort of how you get drama. You play drama out with, you know, taking your protagonist, and you're basically saying, okay, this is something that they're proud of. This is something that they think that they're really skilled at, and you test that, and then you show that they're not as skilled as they thought they were. One of the things that I teach at the Kubert School, I'm teaching narrative storytelling and writing. Basically, one of the things that I teach to them is there's four things that you need to know about every character. You need to know who they are, what their name is, where they're from, what they're proud of, and what they're afraid of. Because these are the things, these are just the core things that you need to know about a character. And what they're proud of is what you're going to test. You know, if, as we've seen, Lorraine has this extra ability, she has magic. Well, guess what? When in later stories, that's going to be tested. And her, oh yeah, I can do this and I can do this, isn't so impressive when a lot of other people can. And also, you know, what is somebody afraid of? That's the first thing a villain's going to go after is, you know, how many times has Aunt May been kidnapped? You know,
we've lost count.
You know, exactly. And that's something that the villain is going to go after. That's something that makes him vulnerable, that makes the character vulnerable. Where they're from is important because depending on where they're from, it can influence and talk, you know, it can be a talking point of what type of person they are. I mean, if they come from a place that is like ultra conservative or ultra cultural or something like that, that can inform the readership what type of person this is and, you know, what kind of experience they had.
Without giving us a whole lot of spoilers, what can you tell us about the magical world that Lorraine comes from? And now here, she was actually like a princess, correct?
Yes. It's funny because some of the press didn't mention that. So I didn't know whether or not it was a spoiler or not. But yes, she is a princess. That also comes into play when we get back there. But she is the heir to the throne of Janata. And Janata is the name of her homeworld. And Janata is a place where children are warriors. She left because she didn't want to be a soldier. She didn't want to fight in a war. And she also didn't want to have a child in Janata because the child would then become part of the war effort. So she escaped. She left. We see her daughter, Joanna, and we see that there are some nefarious people from Janata that are taking children to Janata. I'm not going to say it's a commentary on war or anything like that. I'm not going to go that. But it does say something. I mean, like when, you know, I kind of pitched the log line as kind of like, you know, it had a bit of Ender's Game to it. You know, that idea of, you know, children fighting the war, basically. In Janata, one of the things that is, I guess, for lack of a better term, this idea of, you know, you have children for the war effort. You don't really have children because, you know, out of love or anything. You have children because you need to make reinforcements. Lorraine didn't want to live in that world, and she didn't want to raise her child in that world. So she left. And as we see in the first issue, her daughter does have magic. Mm-hmm. So Joanna does have abilities like her mother. And we'll learn a lot more about that and a lot more about where Lorraine came from.
Which I cannot wait to find out because the first issue ends on such a cliffhanger. I got to the end, I was like, no, this can't be how the issue ends. I want to know more right now, damn it.
Yeah, that's the hell of a monthly story.
I know, right? but it's a good ending, you know? We get introduced to a lot. I think that we were given definitely a lot in the first story, but it wasn't like crammed down our throats. It was a very easy way of writing. What's the best way to, like, open a story?
I kind of have a formula, good or bad. Every story is kind of two stories. So if you look at 12 Devils, the story takes place in the past. We open every issue with the past, and then we jump to the present, and we see immediately how that previous, that past interaction is now coloring the present. I did that with M3. There's going to be some of that also with Forgotten Home. Some people would say it's formulaic. I am a true believer in the fact that your past and your acceptance or non-acceptance of your past is going to color your future and your present. So either you find a way to accept the past and move on from it and use those experiences to then make wise decisions for your future, whereas other people will just sort of ignore the past.
Okay.
But I guess, you know, but that's not my business. That's their life.
I get you. Is that something that you learned through writing, or has that been more like a personal experience?
Just, I guess, a personal experience. You know, I mean, I'm in my 40s, so I haven't obviously lived, you know, I'm not like a grandparent, but I have lived a long enough life to know that there's things that you do and things that you don't want to do anymore. And there's a lot of acceptance that goes into life. There's a lot of acceptance of things that you've done, things that you haven't done, regrets and things like that. I've been very open about talking about being in AA and being in recovery. And one of the things that you kind of have to do is you have to not only, you know, ask for forgiveness from people who you've wronged because of your addiction, but you also kind of have to forgive yourself for things that you've done and for things that, you know, you may not have known at the moment were hurtful to people. So accepting, you know, who you are, what you've done, and just using that information to become a better person and letting that inform you to become a better person. I mean, otherwise you're just going to keep making the same mistakes over and over. And, you know, who wants to do that?
Gluttons for punishment, I would say. But I see the point you're making, you know. Like, I mean, we all screw up, and that's not really a problem. And it's like literally everyone everywhere. But it's a matter of looking back on it and say, okay, why did I screw up? What happened? How did I get to where I am now? And how can I avoid it down the road?
And I think that it's interesting because you know that this is what I did, and I had that experience. So now how do I use that experience to move forward?
Mm-hmm. Now, is this going to be a central tenet for the series? You know, is Lorraine going to have to look back on the things she did and sort of realize what it led to?
Oh, yeah. Lorraine is going to have a huge come to Jesus moment. she is definitely, she's going to be confronted with people from her past. They are not entirely impressed with her, and she's really going to have to come to terms with things she did and people that she hurt, because, you know, she did things for selfish reasons, and it's going to come back to bite her in the ass, and it's basically what happened.
Now, is that everyone's perspective on her, that she was selfish?
That's a lot of people's perspective on her. When she left, she hurt a lot of people. And she disappointed a lot of people. And that's something that you're going to see directly with some close friends of hers, that once she's back, they're going to make an appearance.
Okay.
And Lorraine is definitely going to have sort of a, what's the word? She's basically going to have like the intervention, you know, the friends being like, oh, well, you're back now. And guess what? Things are not the same. And you can't just go back to being, you know, buddy, buddy, because, you know, lots of stuff happened while you were gone, while you were off, you know, playing hero in, on Earth. Guess what? You know, we had really crazy stuff going on here too.
Yeah. So she's going to really, really see what she did and the price that basically everyone else had to pay.
Yeah. And, you know, and to be fair, we see more of what she went through, and it's not entirely quiet sheriff, you know, home life. It's not entirely like happy go lucky kind of thing. I mean, there are some trials and tribulations that she hits, while on Earth as well, but she escaped some of the more some of the more brutal things that some of her friends had to live through. And when she is confronted by them, you know, the first thing that somebody wants to do when they're confronted by their mistakes is get really defensive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, you know, your first thing of, what do you mean? I didn't, you know, it's not about you kind of thing. I did this for me. And it was kind of like, well, that's the problem, is you did it for you and you didn't take into account anybody else. You didn't take into account how it would affect anybody else. And, you know, look at what you've wrought, basically.
Given all this, do you think Lorraine is a good person? I mean, it sounds like she left for, you know, decent reasons, well-meaning reasons, but there's been so much, you know, fallout from this.
I think she's a good person. I think she, I think that she was misguided. She was very young when she left, and she was very myopic, and she had this singular purpose. She couldn't really see the forest through the trees. And being as young as she was, she didn't realize the impact of her leaving, because she sort of, she underestimated her role as princess, and she underestimated her role with the group of friends that she, for lack of a better term, abandoned. And she ends up seeing the error of her ways, and she is a good person. I mean, she ultimately had a good thoughts of, you know, I want to raise my kid right and this, that, and the next thing. But, you know, you can't always just leave.
Exactly. Yeah. You can't just turn tail and bolt because it doesn't work for you.
Exactly. And that's the thing. I mean, and it, there are so many times that I'm sure there's so many situations that people have been in when they sort of want to just say, all right, I'm bouncing, see you later. But that's not always feasible, and that's not always viable. And I think that, you know, social media wise, you see people talking a lot about, you know, oh, if somebody's in an abusive relationship or something like that, why didn't they just leave? Well, sometimes it's not that easy. And, you know, sometimes people have responsibilities that they don't want to, you know, screw up, or they don't want it to be negatively affected. Not that, you know, not that Lorraine was in this abusive relationship, but this idea of, you know, her just wanting to leave as opposed to really giving it the thought that it deserved. But again, she was young when it happened. So, you know, a lot of times teenagers are kind of in their own heads.
Yes, they are. Yes, they definitely are.
Spoken as a dad, I'm sure.
No kids for me, but just knowing how I was. Yeah, you really are in your own head. You kind of live in the moment. You don't always see the choices you make and what comes of it. It definitely sounds like Lorraine is in for a big reality check when she gets back, because this is her first time going back in any sense. She hasn't, like, checked in. She hasn't seen what's happened. She's totally going as blind, right?
She has not gone back in 15 years.
So a lot's changed. I'm sure it's not going to be all for the better.
A lot has changed. She's changed as a person. One of the things that we learn is that she is a veteran. So she's been in the Army. She that's the one thing she was trained to do, is to be a soldier. So even on Earth, she said, okay, well, this is the one thing that I can do. So she is a veteran. She's done long tours in the Middle East. She lived in Germany. She lived a bunch of different places. But she has not been home since. And now that she's going back, I mean, there's a lot that she did not anticipate.
I also want to ask about the magic in this series, because it's not what you might think. You know, people, when they think magic, they think casting spells and doing this and doing that. This seems a little less organized. It seems to be more of an energy that these characters possess. They can let them do different things. But talk to me about like developing the style of magic in this series.
Well, like I was saying, a lot has to do with the energy that people give off, the energy that items give off, like of a frequency. And it's about focusing on that and being able to manipulate that and being able to not just manipulate it, but also harness that energy. There's sort of a, I don't want to get too into it because I don't want to spoil things, but there are sort of, you know, your training montage kind of thing that explains it, that explains where it comes from, how it affects certain people, how some people are, don't have magic that should have magic, and, you know, how that's sort of a societal issue because, you know, in a society where all your kids are warriors, if you're a kid without magic, that's kind of like a no-no.
I really like the way that the magic kind of works in this series because, like I said, magic has had so many different permutations, and you know, like there was no like spell books here, there was no scrolls, there was no like speaking in weird tongues. It was just kind of like an extension of like what the person does. So I really just kind of like the way that you went about doing that.
Yeah, it's very simple. It's just an extension of their own energy. Kind of thing. It's probably like closer to the X-Men than something like Charmed, because Charmed, you had the Book of Shadows, mm-hmm. and the sisters had spells that they would cast and things like that. Same thing with, you know, Doctor Strange, he's casting spells and such. And even in some of the, you know, fantasy of Xena, you know, some of the people that they would have, you know, cauldrons and potions and things like that. This is just basically, you know, harnessing your energy, harnessing the energy of whatever object or person you're trying to manipulate, and you know, focusing in on that. And it's sort of almost like Zen master kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Erica, just a couple more questions for you. Sure. You mentioned earlier that you're a writing instructor over at the Kubert School in Jersey.
Yeah.
If someone were to come to you and saying that they have an idea for a series, but they're struggling with getting it, you know, past just being a concept, what would you tell them?
Well, I mean, ideas are really plentiful. It's execution that sort of that separates, you know, the ideas from, you know, just random things. So I would say try and find the unique part of the idea that sets it apart from anything else. Like, I always use like Rocky as an example because, you know, most people have seen Rocky. So, you know, the idea behind Rocky is, you know, bum decides to work out and make it to the big time. You know, it's a hero's journey story where, you know, kind of almost a rags to riches story. If you just say it that way, then that story's been done a million times. What makes the story Rocky is Nick and Adrian and Pauly and Apollo and the relationship between these characters and the competitiveness between Rocky and Apollo and their families and the drama behind all of that. That's what makes it Rocky versus just a story about a guy who's trying to make something of himself. I would say if you have an idea that you want to make into a comic or a TV show or a movie or whatever, find the unique part about the execution of the idea and really start working on that. I would also say, you know, write a character, you know, start with your characters. Sometimes I start with a situation and then, you know, populate the world with characters. Other times I start with a character and build a story around them. If you want something that's very compelling, I would say start with your characters. The thing that makes people want to read something or makes people want to interact with it or watch it or whatever is basically if there's some type of emotional connection that people will have with the characters. So if you can make your characters relatable and if there will be an emotional connection that an audience member can latch onto, then that's something that is going to be more successful than, you know, unlikable characters. That's one thing that I kind of always worried with Lorraine is, like you said, is Lorraine a good person? I pepper in her, you know, being a good mom and things like that and sort of making her likable that way. because ultimately you want your hero to be, you want to root for your hero, whether they're a good person or a bad person. I mean, you look at M3 is technically the hero of that story, even though she's an assassin, but you sort of layer in complexity to the character to make them be relatable. And I always talk about how Magneto is, I think, one of the best villains ever, because he's a relatable character, even though, I mean, at times he's been the hero, but for the most part, he's a villain, but he's still relatable. And you can understand why he did what he did and why he took that side versus, versus Charles's side.
I think that the best heroes are the flawed ones, are the ones who are, they're making mistakes. They're not perfect people, because that's how humanity is. That's how people are. They're maybe, you're not always sure if they're actually up to the task.
Another thing is that, you know, if a hero is so perfect, then they're not relatable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you want your reader or your viewer to be able to look at the hero and say, that could be me. Or I can understand that. I can relate to that. And I mean, that's why a character like Superman or Martian Manhunter or any character like that, or even Hawkgirl. I mean, I got the chance to write Hawkgirl for a couple of pages, and that was, you know, an amazing experience. But you're dealing with these aliens. It's like, okay, well, how do you make this alien relatable? Martian Manhunter, he deals with loneliness, the loss of his family. This is something that anybody can relate to. You know, they say the human experience, which obviously if he's Martian, it's not the human experience, but it's this idea of there's an experience that everyone has, no matter where you're from, whether you're from Krypton or Mars or Thanagar or wherever. You know, there is this experience that we all have, loss and joy and pain and things like that. So when you play off on that, you are then allowing the audience to be able to say, yes, I can see where this character is coming from. I can see myself in this character, even though they're not a green-skinned shapeshifter.
Superman is like just shy of like being God, basically, in terms of his power levels. And Batman, he's always got a plan. He's always got a trick up his sleeve or a gizmo that can just totally end the fight. So it's more important with those characters to say, okay, how do we, you know, bring them back to the real world?
Well, I think Superman is a character that has a lot of humanity, and he has humanity because of Martha and Jonathan. You know, if Superman didn't have that sort of aw shucks, you know, very Midwestern kind of attitude, then, I mean, what's to stop them from burning the world to the ground? You know, so because of that, because he had Martha and Jonathan's influence, and because they were so kind-hearted to him and so just taught him such compassion, then him, you know, wanting to help people became part of who he was naturally, you know, became part of his character. At the same time, you know, we talked about what's something that your character's afraid of. Well, he's afraid of losing his family. Well, what's the first thing that people are going to go after? They're going to go after Martha. They're going to go after Lois Lane or Jimmy Olsen and people that are close to him, because family and friends are important to him because he has this compassion.
Well, Erica, it's been absolutely awesome talking to you. I am definitely looking forward to checking out the rest of the series. But if the folks at home want to learn more about you, maybe find out how they can take a class or just learn about the kind of works you've done, where's the best place to go for this?
Well, if you're thinking about taking classes from the Qbert School, it is qbertschool.edu, and you can check out classes and all the different classes that they offer. There's correspondence courses as well. I am on Twitter at ErikaSchultz42. I'm not really on Facebook. And I'm on Instagram at Erica Schultz Writes, WRITES, and ErikaSchultzWrites.com is my website. And I should blog more, but I don't, because I just don't, and I should. I know.
Well,
I don't, and I should.
Yeah. Hey, it's a time thing. You sound like you've got a very, very full plate.
Yeah, I do have a very full plate.
Will there be any Comic-Con appearances coming up pretty soon? Or?
Well, I just finished, I just had Baltimore Comic-Con, but I will be at Big Apple Comic-Con on December 14th. It's a one-day show at the New Yorker Hotel in Manhattan. So I will be at that, and then that is the last show for me for the year.
Erica, once again, thank you. A real pleasure.
Thank you very, very much. I'm glad you're enjoying the series.
Hey guys, what's going on? This is Brian Murphy from One Time Mountain, and you're listening to Citywide Blackout with Max Bowen.
Rock on.
All right, folks, that brings this episode to a close. I want to thank Erica for joining me, and definitely check her work out and all the many other comics available through comixology.com. It's just $6 a month. You get access to things from Marvel, DC, tons of indie presses. It's definitely worth it. And to close things out, I bring you the song The Suitable Woman from Layla Carden. This one's got a cool, mellow flow, and I was hooked right from the beginning. Don't forget to follow the show on Facebook under Citywide Blackout, Twitter, Instagram, Citywide Max, and message me at citywidemax@yahoo.com. As always, keep those ears open.
Suitable woman. You're a a suitable, 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 suitable woman.
Suitable woman.
You're a suitable, 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 suitable. You're a suitable.